Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Star Trek DS9 podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we are watching Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. We are on Season 1, Episode 3 of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, entitled A Man Alone. It aired January 17th, 1993. Before we get too deep into the episode, I want to talk about whether or not there were any mistakes from the previous podcast that we need to correct. Any from you?
Nothing that I can think of.
Okay.
Having listened to it 300 times.
Okay, well, I do have one. Uh-oh. And that's that we misnamed Garrick's clothing shop. I think you said it was called Garrick's Tailor Shop. It turns out it's actually called Garrick's Clothiers.
Oh, I should know that, shouldn't I?
We're going to get letters about that. So now we've corrected it. I'm sure everything else was perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let's jump into the episode. We start with the cold open. We open on Bashir walking in on Dax. I don't know what she's doing. She's sitting on the floor, cross-legged, like maybe she's meditating.
Yeah, she looks like she's meditating.
And there's a big floating bubble in the room, as if there is a bubble machine, like a child's bubble machine somewhere. Yeah. And this giant bubble is floating around.
I'm pretty sure that ball with the patterning on it and things, that's one of the free demo renders that comes with the CGI app.
That's great. She recognizes that Julian has entered the room, even though she has her eyes closed and doesn't see him. And he says, oh, you are remarkable, because she could do that. He is a hopeless, annoying flirt.
I find it funny he says she's remarkable because it's fairly easy to spot people from their footsteps. He's really reaching here.
And she says, we need to talk. Uh-oh.
Yes. At this point, I have to question, when does this turn into officially stalking?
I don't know, but that is a good question. We don't, of course, because it's a TV show and it's limited to 45 minutes, right? We don't see every minute of the day. We don't know if he's standing outside of her quarters every time she comes out in the morning and tries to walk her home every... We don't know.
Yeah, it could be an HR violation.
It could be. We've had a few on the show and we're only in episode 3, so I'm concerned about him for sure. But she says, we need to talk, which we know right away is code for, you're driving me crazy.
He's like an annoying puppy.
He is like an annoying puppy. And she says, we need to talk about trills and relationships. And he says, oh, fine, we'll do it over supper. So it takes no hint. It's gross.
Yeah, totally missing it. Missing the point, dude.
And he says that Quark has found him a delightful champagne, which they can share. Then he asks about the big bubble in the room. It took a long time to get to the big bubble. But now he's like, what the heck with this big bubble? And she says it's an Altonian brain teaser and it responds to neural theta waves. So it's essentially a puzzle and the goal is to turn it into a solid color.
It looks like one of the free demos that used to come with the rendering tools.
So she says she's been trying to master this game for 140 years. All I can think is, playing a game you can't win for 100 years. That's just torture. That's not a game. That's just torture.
Yeah, that falls under torture.
She tells him to give it a try, and so she comes up behind him and touches his head, which he gets grossly excited about. And he says, oh, your hands are so cold, and she explains that, well, that's a Trill thing, apparently, that Trill's hands are cold. She tries to get him to focus on the game, but he's distracted by her exotic scent. Yuck. I'm just so grossed out by this scene. It's just gross.
It's just trying to reinforce that he's young and impulsive. Or a stalker, I don't know.
It's not that. It's just, this is a work environment. And I just don't think that's mature or respectable or responsible. It's just gross. And she has told him no early on, and he's still trying. And I don't like it. She transfers the game to him and the bubble disappears because his mind is too busy. And then he asks again about supper just when Sisko arrives and she leaves with Sisko. And so Bashir is disappointed and he resets the game. Then we cue theme song.
Yeah, poor Julian. He looks very dejected.
So we've cued the theme song. We have the flying slow rock, just like always. And I timed it this time because I'm curious. And it's just under 2 minutes. So it's about 2 minutes long. So if you watch this show, you've spent 176 times 2 minutes watching the slow moving rock and listening to the theme song.
That sounds like the kind of thing you would totally time.
Yes.
That sounds just like you.
Thank you. Yes, I like to be consistent. Now we are in Quark's, and Odo is there talking to Quark, and he's commenting on business being good for Quark. They discuss the wormhole bringing in new faces.
I think I want to ask if Quark's bar is actually the center of the show. It seems to be the most important focus of episodes so far.
Yeah, nearly everything takes place in or near Quark's, for sure. Certainly in this episode, they spend a lot of time in Quark's, way less time in Ops.
I just feel they missed an opportunity for a Star Trek spin-off called Quarks, and they could model it on Cheers.
Sure, they've already got Norm.
Yeah, Morn would fit into that role really nicely.
Every time Morn walks in, do people in the bar go, Morn?
They should. That would be great. I think we should pitch this to CBS.
We should. I worry we've missed the opportunity now since this was 1993 when this airs. All right. Uh-oh. There's an argument on the second floor of Quark's. Keiko is yelling at Miles. We don't hear exactly what's going on, but Quark said that the grapevine says O'Brien and the missus are having problems. I don't think the grapevine is needed because they're arguing loudly enough that everyone can hear and see it.
I'm going to tick off another angry woman.
Yes. I'm glad you said it, because you know I was going to say it.
Considering these two already had problems in The Next Generation, why are they even married?
Well, really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they had some issues getting married. Obviously, there were some times like where the alien took over Miles. But hey, that's the kind of thing, if you're on Star Trek, that's the kind of thing you have to expect. But by the end, it was episodic. So by the end of the episode, everything was fine. He was back to normal. It was fine.
Oh,
he reset
right.
And everybody was happy.
Okay, I'll go with that.
Okay, so I wrote in my notes, because Quark said grapevine, I wrote, speaking of vines, where are the vines from the last episode? Because remember, there were vines all over that we could see, and that I haven't seen any vines, at least not up till this point.
In between the episodes, Quark actually did hire a gardener.
Oh, God.
If you watch this scene carefully, I believe in the background, when he and Odo are talking, you actually see Morn walk for the first time on the episode. You see him walk past from right to left. This was recorded in SD, so it makes obsessing about what's in the background of scenes a lot more difficult. This is where HD is so good. You can spend hours looking in the background, searching for things.
Right, you can pause.
It really feeds into an obsessive nature.
Yeah. Odo says that he doesn't understand the humanoid need to couple, and Quark is immediately interested in his lack of coupling, which he says in a very suggestive way.
Yes.
And it's kind of gross. And Odo says there's too many compromises. Then he rants about how you always compromise to what she wants to do. First of all, doesn't have to be a she if that's not your thing. And secondly, bite me. That was my reaction to that rant.
Yes, Odo does seem to be pretty grumpy about relationships.
What I don't understand is, what are Odo's references? What has he been watching that has given him this opinion?
Bad Hallmark movies?
I don't mean what's he watching on TV. I mean, what's he seeing in his environment? He's an alien that he told us in the pilot that he was found in a wormhole. So what is it exactly that he has seen that tells him that women are so awful? And that coupling, which I use air quotes on, is such a bad thing.
Maybe he's been to a lot of domestics, as the cops call them.
Well, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Maybe he's been... Okay, sure. That would surprise me if the woman was the problem in all of those situations.
Indeed.
I don't know. Let me just say again, as I try to remember why I got turned off to this show, these kinds of things feed into that pretty quickly.
I can understand why, yes.
I literally, when I was watching this, when he got to the end of his rant, said two bad words to the TV. Because it doesn't make sense. He's not even a person. He's a shapeshifter. It doesn't make any sense. But we could get stuck here for a long time, so we should move on.
Okay, let's move on.
All right, so he's wondering what Keiko is upset about, and Quark says that she doesn't like it here, and all I could think was, why should she like it there? It's anti-woman, and it's a dump. Odo's response was hilarious. He said, who does?
Oh, yeah, he's pretty grumpy, isn't he?
And that's what I wrote down, too. I wrote, he's a bit of a grump.
Perhaps they should have discussed moving there before they actually made the move.
Yeah, we will get to that. Dax and Sisko appear at the bar. Quark is now grossly drooling over her.
Oh, yeah, he's totally creeping on Jadzia.
Remember, he hit on Kira at the very end of the pilot. So now we're on to Dax. So I'm sure Keiko is next.
Yeah, I can't imagine what he would have been like with the Klingon women last week.
Oh, I don't want to think about it.
Although, on a positive note, we do definitely see Morn walking right to left in the background.
Okay, all right.
Yes, I'm obsessed with Morn spotting.
Odo thinks there's something going on between Dax and Sisko, but Quark says no. He's practically salivating over her. I mean, are women going to get any respect on this show? Or will we get to episode 4 and I'll just go, oh my God, turn it off. What's going to happen next? Oh, just then, Odo sees somebody playing what looks like craps. I guess the Ferengi version of craps. And he's immediately freaked out by this person. Upstairs, where Dax and Sisko are, Dax orders steamed Asna. We don't know what it is, but Sisko is grossed out by it, and he starts talking about his dad's cooking, and then they laugh awkwardly.
I don't know why Sisko is uncomfortable. I mean, what was the rationale for that?
Well, he talks in this scene about how Dax was a mentor and like a father to him. And now all of a sudden it's this young woman. And I think that's just a little bit awkward. And the fact that he was, you know, we're supposed to be so progressive, but we're not progressive, right? And he was looking at her funny in the pilot as well. He did that whistle and looked her up and down. So I don't think he can quite reconcile his memories of Dax and what she looks like now. He's not able to separate the two.
Yeah, so it's difficult for him adjusting, I guess, to his old friend now having a female host.
It shouldn't be a problem, but it clearly is a problem. Dax does say that Trill relationships often don't last when the hosts change. I mean, we saw that in Next Gen, and we talked about that in the first episode.
Right.
Sisko says that's not going to happen to them. And I was thinking, it's like when people go into a long-distance relationship, and they always say, oh, no, it'll work for us. It hasn't worked for anybody else, but it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Keiko has had enough and she storms off. We still don't know exactly what was going on up there.
Hashtag angry women.
Miles notices that people are looking at them. And so he leaves too. And then somebody shouts Dabo. And now that suspicious Bajoran that Odo was looking at is playing Dabo. Odo approaches and tells the guy he doesn't want him there. And the dude says he has every right to be there. And then they get into a scuffle. Sisko has to run down the stairs, I guess, and break the scuffle up. What I don't get is when Odo is fighting with someone, why doesn't he like shapeshift into a giant hammer or something and just bop the guy?
Yeah, those effects would be expensive.
I never thought about that. That's probably it. Odo tells the stranger that he has 26 hours to leave the station. I don't know what's special about 26 hours, but that's what he says. Do we establish that that's a day on Bajor or something? 26 hours?
Yeah.
We've moved to the promenade and Keiko is looking out the window. And Miles comes up behind her saying he could ask for a transfer. He obviously knows she's unhappy there. But she says that she doesn't think that would be fair for him to give up his promotion. And she's just lost because Starfleet doesn't need a botanist on this station, which was her career. And I'm thinking, maybe you should have thought about this before we moved here, or maybe you need a new career. He suggests that she create an arboretum with the new plant specimens from the Gamma Quadrant, but she's like, I don't go to the Gamma Quadrant. I don't have a ship. I'm not part of any team that does that.
Okay, that seems very strange.
Which part?
Well, Starfleet is all about exploration, and they have a wormhole leading to an entire new quadrant.
Yeah.
And they're not immediately having exploration teams sending ships out, at which point a botanist would be an extremely useful person to have around.
Well, but also, they're near Bajor.
Yep.
Maybe Bajor needs a botanist, and she could commute to Bajor every day.
Yeah.
And do a job there. I'm sure they have plants.
They probably have plants.
This is weird. As a married couple in the future, you'd think they'd be smart enough to talk about things like this before they make the move.
My point earlier.
But I'm also thinking maybe Miles was kind of fibbing to her about Deep Space Nine, you know, saying how great it will be in the same way that Sisko was telling Jake it would be great. Maybe he said, there'd be lots of plants there. Like Sisko said, there'd be lots of kids there. And there aren't.
There's some vines in the bar.
We didn't see them. I think we do actually see them again later. But yeah, she could be looking after those vines because they look terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
She also, at the end of this conversation, she's kind of complaining that she doesn't have anything to do. So she really drops the hammer on him after they're having this conversation about how, you know, she's feeling lost and doesn't really have anything to do. But she drops the hammer by saying, do you really want to raise our daughter here? And it was like, ouch.
Yep.
That was nasty. But just then, Miles gets a call from Kira. He doesn't have his sleeves rolled up, I noticed, so he's back to just normal Miles. He's not worker man Miles.
He's off duty.
There's a non-functional transfer grid on level 5, so Miles has to get busy, so he's saved by that call. Elsewhere, still on the promenade, we see Jake meets Nog. So Nog is the kid from the first episode, the Ferengi kid who was caught stealing and temporarily thrown in the brig and used as blackmail to get Quark to stay. So now Nog is eating the world's largest popsicle. I think that's what it is. And he's a little standoffish to Jake and calls him like human, you know, get away from me. But Jake is desperate for a friend. He says, there aren't any kids here. Eventually he introduces himself and it looks like they're going to be fast friends.
Initially not very friendly.
Which I think is maybe the Ferengi way. especially to humans.
Is there any profit in this for me?
Well, yeah. We go to Sisko's office next, and Odo is telling Sisko about that guy that he was fighting with back at Quark's. He says his name is Ibudan, and he used to run black market goods through Deep Space Nine to the surface when the Cardassians were occupying the place. So some Bajorans thought he was a hero, but Odo saw him do some bad things, including letting a child die when the parents couldn't afford the drug that would have saved her life. He says a few years after that, he killed a Cardassian officer who wanted a payoff to look the other way for some of his shenanigans, and he ended up going to prison for murder. Odo sent him there, and the provisional government just let him go. I wrote down in my notes, took 11 minutes before somebody said provisional government. Drink!
This all seems a little bit odd to me, and very shaky. Because surely if during an occupation you killed a Cardassian, you'd immediately be shot.
Yep.
Plus, there'd be reprisal killings of, say, 100 locals or so. That's typically what happens during occupations. The occupiers are not very nice.
Yeah.
No wonder the Cardassians had to leave. I mean, they didn't even know how to run an effective occupation.
Well, we don't know the details. We only know what Odo knows. At any rate, this guy's not in prison anymore. Killing a Cardassian isn't considered much of a crime nowadays. Is what they said.
That would actually make sense in the big picture.
Yeah, maybe some crimes committed under the occupation are not as important anymore.
Yeah.
But Sisko says it doesn't sound like there's anything that they can do about it. He says he's done nothing wrong and Odo can't arbitrarily force him to leave. I don't quite see how that's true. It's not arbitrary. He did do something. I mean, he is a murderer. Can't we just reserve the right to refuse service to someone, like put up a big sign on the space station?
No shoes, no service.
But when he tells Odo, Sisko tells Odo, you know, you can't put him in jail. You can't do anything about it. Odo says, watch me. And Sisko says, you can't take the law into your own hands. And Odo says the laws change depending on who's making them, but justice is justice. And since he's in charge of security, which, that triggered Sisko. Sisko jumps to his feet and says, if he can't work within the rules, he'll find someone who can. And then the music swells and Odo stomps out of the office.
I like how Avery plays the Sisko character here. He starts off being very mellow and seeking compromise,
yeah.
Very approachable. And then when Odo crosses that line, he immediately turns into the hard nose. Yeah, I'm going to kick you off the station if you don't follow the rules.
And he also has to jump to his feet to show that he's bigger.
To assert his authority.
Odo could just go taller.
Yeah, ultimately, I like the way Sisko is being portrayed.
Okay, we go now to someone getting a massage from a woman with webbed fingers, where we do a close-up on the webbed fingers, which it looks like she's maybe wearing gloves that are webbed. So she's giving this person a massage, and then she starts kissing his back. And you know, because what we haven't had yet is just some good old prostitution. That's what's been missing.
Is a space station.
Oh my god. Looks like it's Ibudan, the Bajoran who we've been talking about. I mean, he's kind of laying on his face, so it's hard to tell, but I assume that's who it is. And I wrote down in my notes, this better be a holosuite. This better not be a real thing. Just then, a mysterious hand that appears to be wrapped in either rubber or a black trash bag, I don't know, pushes the masseuse out of the way with very little effort. She like goes flying backwards, I guess because she's a hologram. And this black hand produces a knife and stabs Ibudan in the back. And it's a good old Star Trek bloodless murder.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No blood. Got to maintain that G rating.
Yeah, we see a little blood later, but here, nothing. We just see the knife.
I assumed it was on the holodeck because it had a nice background and it didn't seem like it was on the station.
Good. Back on the promenade, we jump to Nog and Jake laughing at something, and they show a close-up of Nog's hand where he has the Ferengi blue fingernails, and he's holding a tiny container of something that looks like specks of pepper moving around. He calls them Guranian bolites, and the two of them run off giggling.
Uh-oh, getting up to trouble.
Yeah, there's something going on there. Bashir and Dax sort of converge behind them, and the focus shifts to them. Bashir says, I guess I know the competition. Now, meaning Sisko, meaning he's in competition for Dax with Sisko. Because, you know, she's not just a person. She's a prize to be won by the two of them.
Julian is still stalking Jadzia. I like the way she is just not interested in this.
Yeah, she says Trills don't look for romance the same way humans do. In fact, she says we find it quite a nuisance. Which is a great line.
Oh, yeah, that's a put down if ever there was one.
Yeah, he looks very offended, but she says it's a weakness of the young. A Trill host may have those feelings occasionally, but it's our wish to live on a higher plane. And it was in this scene that I saw the vines again, like the sort of dead vines behind them while they were talking on the promenade. They're not pretty, and it would be a good idea if Keiko could work on those.
Yeah, perfect for a botanist.
She's not a gardener, but... Maybe she could find a better life form to put there.
Agreed.
Sisko then calls for Bashir to come to Holosuite 4. Dax and Bashir vacate. And we see Nog again. He's doing something with that little box of the pepper flakes behind a couple that's just sitting at a table eating dinner. I don't know what time of day it is. Maybe they're eating breakfast, but they're eating a meal together. And Jake is watching back in a distant corner, kind of behind a grate. And he's sitting back there giggling. And Nog runs also then behind the grate. And soon that couple starts itching manically. So I guess it's itching powder or something. Jake and Nog are laughing, and then the couple starts to turn color. They turn like pink and blue.
And they freak out.
And everybody around the promenade stops and looks at them. And then all of a sudden it's over. I guess this is just a temporary effect. And they just sit down.
Never mind. Carry on.
Someone in security with the gold security uniform grabs the two hooligans from behind and drags them off. And meanwhile, Keiko sees the whole thing. And she's looking on disapprovingly. And she's standing there going, "Tisk, tisk, we shouldn't raise our daughter here." That's what I thought she was raising.
This is confirming her view that it is no place to raise kids.
This is confirming that view for sure. Now we jump to the Holosuite. We've got Ibudan on the floor, dead, with a knife in his back, a little bit of blood or some red paint on his back, and Bashir is scanning him. Kira and Sisko are standing over him, and Odo is sort of pacing around.
Not too much blood to upset the network execs.
Absolutely not. And in standard def, you can't even really tell what it is. Odo says the door only opened twice. So first when the computer logged Ibudan to check him into the suite, and then the second time someone left, which they fathom, you know, must have been the killer. But there's no record of the killer coming in.
So it was on the holodeck and he was running a porn massage program.
That is correct. He says the suite was secured so no one else could enter while he ran his massage holo program 101A. So just in case you need that for reference later.
Oh, okay, yeah.
23 minutes after he entered, the door opened for the second time, and that was when the killer apparently left. So Bashir says that the killer knew Bajoran anatomy really well because he knew exactly where to stab him. That would kill him quickly. Sisko asks Bashir to look for more evidence to see if there was someone else in the room with him. And he says he'll sweep for hair follicles and DNA fragments. Then Sisko asks how many ships have left since yesterday. And Kira says only two, a Federation survey ship left and a Vulcan science vessel left. I'm pretty sure it's the Vulcans. That they're jerks. They probably did it.
Yes.
Yeah. Sisko says then to tell all the ships in dock that nobody will leave until further notice.
This is Law and Order, Deep Space Nine.
Right, it is. We jump now to Keiko serving dinner to Miles, I'm guessing in their quarters, and she's complaining to him about what she saw Nog and Jake doing, and she says they're looking for trouble on the promenade. She says it's no place for kids. It's not like the Enterprise, so again, another bit of a hammer or a knife, a different kind of knife in the back from Keiko. She says, maybe this place needs a school, something to sort of corral the kids. And Miles does this funny sideways look like, oh, maybe this is something that will distract her from yelling at me.
They're setting up an international school.
Okay, now Kira enters Sisko's office. Sisko is in there with a guy with some seriously feathered hair, and he introduces him as Mr. Zaira, who operates the Transit Aid Center. He was at the craps table with Ibudan earlier. I might just refer to him as the hair guy for the rest of the episode.
Yes, hair guy is completely valid.
Really feathered and never a hair out of place, and the hair doesn't move either.
It seems like very 90s hair, early 90s
hair.
Yeah,
well, coincidentally, it is 1993, January.
Yeah.
Hair guy says he spoke to Ibudan an hour before he was killed. This was after the struggle with the shapeshifter and Quarks. He says that Ibudan said he was scared and that he was afraid that Odo would kill him.
Oh, very serious.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yep.
Right. Now, I feel like this guy's lying.
Don't trust the hair guy.
I don't know if it's the hair or his face, but I think I've seen him play a bad guy before. I'm not sure, but I don't trust him.
Definitely the hair.
Kira says the constable is the most honorable man on the station, so she just dismisses him. Obviously, Sisko is not going to just dismiss this theory. Next, we show a ship that's in dock from the outside, and I'm starting to learn that this is how this show tells me that now I'm going to go inside of this ship. We don't show anybody beaming around. We've just shown the ship from the outside, so now we know that Odo has gone into the ship. So this is apparently Ibudan's ship and how he had arrived. Odo is kind of looking around on it. I forgot one thing. If you watch that scene, there's no other ships in dock. Even though earlier, like a few minutes ago, Sisko said, tell all the other ships they can't leave dock. There's no other ships. There's only that one ship.
They could only afford one model.
I guess so. So Odo is in Ibudan's quarters on this ship. He walks in and he notices that it's a double room, and he says, double accommodations? And the person who's showing them the room, which is somebody from this other ship, says that Ibadan had requested that, but that only one passenger had logged in. So Odo asks for a record of all the passengers on board, and the guy leaves to go and get the manifest, which seems like something maybe a computer nearby could have provided, but he leaves and he leaves Odo alone. So Odo asks the computer for entries made at the terminal in the dead guy's quarters. It says 7 entries of note, which I don't know what that means, but now it pops up and I kind of froze the screen and took the notes here of what was on the screen. It starts with stardate 46383, which is apparently 3 days ago.
Do you notice that's also clearly a Mac font as well?
Oh no, I didn't notice that. Interesting.
So Apple is obviously the choice for Starfleet.
Nice. Sponsored by Apple.
They are based in San Francisco, so that would probably make sense.
Oh, that's true. 3 days ago, there were just some sort of simple things on his list, like lifeboat drill. I think that was my favorite one. He was having a lunch meeting with someone. He was playing tennis on Holodeck 2. Then he was having dinner, and then there was a ship's concert. Then Odo goes to the next day, and then he was on some kind of a subspace teleconference, which I thought was funny. He was having lunch with someone. Then it says, arrive at DSN, disembark, and then shopping at promenade.
And it didn't have porn massage listed.
Oh, you are right. Well, we're not to that. That was still yesterday, because then he goes to the third day. I don't know why we had to do 3 days. But the third day, which is the day of the murder, the first thing he did on that day was play tennis on Holodeck 2.
Oh, that's the code word for it. Going to play tennis.
Oh, maybe. I didn't think about that. You could be right. My suspicion here is this. If there is a holodeck on the ship that he's on, why does he need to go to the holodeck on Deep Space Nine? Is that the only place they have the porn massage holo programs?
Yeah, it could be.
It says tennis holodeck 2, meeting with somebody, then it's lunch at Quark's, transit aid, which by the way, that's what Hair Guy does. And then it says backup computer files.
He's very diligent.
Which I love. That's awesome. Don't you think something's backing that stuff up automatically by now? Anyway, okay, let's not get stuck on the backups. That's the old DBA in me. Next thing says, prepare project review report. We don't know what the project is. And then the last item is Odo. It just says Odo.
This is definitely turning into a Scooby-Doo mystery.
He should have written, get killed by Odo. That's what he should have written.
When you looked at that screen, did you notice the spaceport that they departed from?
Yes, it was... Oh, Alderaan. Yes. Oh my God.
It was Alderaan, and it was the Star Wars spelling of it.
I wrote it down, but it didn't sink in. So he left the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, it's proof both universes are really connected.
I cannot believe I didn't notice it. I wrote it down, but it didn't... I guess because I wasn't thinking Star Wars, it just didn't register. That's amazing.
It has finally been answered.
They're all in one universe. That's amazing.
Yep.
All right. After the last item where Odo sees his name, he's just, uh-oh, I wonder what that's about. We jump to Sisko's quarters now, which we haven't been since the pilot. We don't spend any time showing whether or not we have beds yet. I was very disappointed that we didn't cover the state of the beds. Instead, we're here because Keiko is talking to Sisko with Jake there. And Sisko is saying that Jake won't have anything more to do with Nog. Jake is like, oh, great. The only other kid, and I can't even talk to him. He was so lied to.
Oh, yeah.
That is such a bummer. But Keiko says, Nog is not the only kid. There's 12 other children on board. And all I can think is the parents must keep them locked up because they don't want them on the promenade. And we've never seen them before. But Keiko says there's no structured activity, so there's nowhere for the kids to go. And then she asks Jake if he misses school. And he's like, no.
He's a kid. Of course he's going to say no.
No kid is going to say that. But then he does say, well, it is kind of boring studying by myself on the computer. So Keiko says maybe she could be a good teacher. And Sisko is very supportive of this idea. She says she'll need some space for a school and some computers. And he says he'll support her in all of this, but that he can't force anyone to send their kids to school, meaning he can't force the Ferengi or the Bajorans or anybody else who's on board. He also says that they all have a different culture and different philosophies, which might make it difficult to be a single teacher. And I think that's a really great point. Not just culture and philosophies, but they all have different histories.
Yeah, outlook.
Yeah, different outlooks on life. He's right. It would be very complicated. But Keiko, you know, she's the optimist. She's the botanist optimist, and she's not worried. It seems like she should be, but she's not worried.
She seems the most Star Trek kind of person.
Yeah, I mean, she's been kind of whiny up until now. Understandably, she's not in a great situation. Although, like you said earlier, they should have talked about it before.
She seems very optimistic and positive.
But she's very optimistic about this. She thinks she can do this, which is funny because she's really only interacted with the one kid at this point. I did dig Jake's purple outfit in this scene. It's very Star Trek-y, but I dig it. It's purple. Now everyone is in medical looking at DNA scans from the crime scene. And the only DNA that they find is Ibudan's, the DNA of those who went in to investigate afterwards. So I don't know if that means they found Odo's DNA too. Does he have DNA?
I assume so.
Maybe he leaves traces, like as he steps. But he's got boots on. But the boots are also shapeshifted. I don't know. Anyway, all I could think was, because we're in this gross holosuite with the porn holosuite, I'm just thinking, hopefully there's some DNA scrubber that comes through afterward and cleans it up, because I only imagine that a holosuite used for these leisure activities is a bit of a cauldron of filth.
Don't get a black light in there.
Oh, no, no, no. Oh, man. Gross. Okay. They don't understand how Ibudan was murdered if no one could get in. And Odo says, you know what? A shapeshifter could get in. He's starting to see that he's looking suspicious at this point. And then a quick cuts to an ad break. He says that, and then we go to an ad break. The very next thing that happens is Odo and Kira are talking. They're coming up in the open air elevator. And Odo says it's a very neat package because Ibudan's calendar shows that he was planning to meet Odo at the time of the murder. Only Odo could get into a locked room. At least that's what they think right now. So Kira asks if he has an alibi. He says he has to return to his natural state every 18 hours to regenerate. So he says he was in a bucket when it happened.
Yeah. Yeah, Odo's in the bucket.
Oh my God, I laugh too. Maybe there's a timed video that points at the bucket. You know what? He should point a camera at the bucket to give himself an alibi.
Well, I suppose at least he doesn't need quarters. I mean, you just give him a bucket in his office and he's happy.
Yeah, that's true. He doesn't need quarters. He just has an office. Kira says that the killer must have known about his schedule. Well, hold on. I need to back up now, because now I'm thinking he didn't need an office. Or he didn't need quarters because he only had an office and a bucket. That makes me think of Data on Next Gen, who did have quarters, whereas he could have just had a closet like Bender in Futurama.
That is an amazing connecting Data and Bender.
Anyway, I digress.
I'm impressed.
I did just do that. Okay. Kira says that the killer must have known about Odo's schedule, like when he would be in the bucket and he wouldn't really have an alibi. Odo says that he can think of hundreds of people who might want to frame him, but he hasn't seen any of those people recently. I love that line.
It's a play on know a man by his enemies.
He calls Bashir and he asks him if he could scan Ibudan's quarters like he was scanning the holosuite to see who else was in there, because it's bothering him that it's a double accommodation, but only Ibudan seems to have been there.
Right.
Now we go to Quark's, and someone has Dabo, and Keiko is trying to convince Rom. Rom is the brother of Quark and the father of Nog.
We get to see Rom for the first time.
Yeah, we get to see him for the first time. We've heard of him, but we haven't seen him yet. And Keiko's trying to convince Rom that Nog should come to her new school. He's not really excited about this because he doesn't want to send his kid to a Federation school. But she says that she's developing a broad curriculum since, you know, an hour ago when she was having the first conversation about it. She's developing a broad curriculum.
She's a fast worker.
She's a scientist. Sure, she could probably be good at this.
Rom does seem to sort of exude Ferengi confidence. It's funny because I guess they hadn't fully fleshed out his character, because
he's different later.
It didn't seem like what Rom becomes later.
Well,
he seemed a little bit too sort of self-confident and sure of himself.
Okay, well, I guess we'll see that more later. I don't
know
him well. This is my only introduction to him.
Yeah, it's an interesting introduction.
But he calls her little lady twice. She should have smacked him.
She's the same height as him.
She's tiny, isn't she?
Yeah, she's very small, but he's not a big guy.
Well, anyway, he calls her little lady and says she doesn't know anything about Ferengi education, where they normally will just throw kids into the cutthroat world of Ferengi commerce. She's not stupid. She butters him up a little, and she almost convinces him, but then he says Nog wouldn't listen to her anyway because she's female.
Yes.
Great.
We see the Ferengi are a little sexist in their outlook.
Yeah.
I'd have to check, but I thought that had been touched on in The Next Generation.
There's definitely something in Next Gen about that. And in fact, isn't there something about them always wanting women to be naked? I have to go back and look. I will probably be correcting this at the beginning of the next podcast.
Yes, we'll be correcting that in the next
episode. Regardless, it's annoying. He kind of insults her and then wanders off. We're still at the bar here at Quark's, and...
which is this entire center of the show.
It is. And hair guy Mr. Zera, who's the obvious bad guy here, is sitting at the bar saying, in quotes, "What do we know about him anyway? He's not one of us. He isn't one of anything." Meaning Odo, right? He's building unrest around Odo. He wonders why the security chief under the Federation is the same as it was under the Cardassian rule. I have to say, that's an excellent question.
Yes. Finally, somebody brings that up, that Odo was the head of security under the Cardassians. Surely somebody would think of him as a collaborator.
Yeah, and I think that's what Hair Guy is trying to spread. We've certainly not seen that, although we've seen Odo side with the way the Cardassians handled their oppression because it was very black and white. He's also very black and white at this point, and just, you know, he wants to be able to make snap decisions.
It just makes things
and
easier.
And the Federation's not letting him do that. Yeah, it just makes things easier. Quark sticks his nose into this conversation, saying no one knows Odo better than him. He calls him an ill-tempered, overbearing crosspatch, which I'm not sure what a crosspatch is, but what a great description. But he does say that Odo was no Cardassian collaborator and that he was no killer. The bad guy, the hair-feathered guy, is shocked that Quark, his worst enemy, would defend Odo. But Quark says he guesses that's the closest thing Odo has to a friend. And the hair guy laughs this kind of menacing laugh.
I have a theory about this. I'm wondering if Quark is standing up for Odo because at the end of the day, Odo is incorruptible. And for somebody like Quark, if he had different security officers, they might be corrupt, they might be part of organized crime, and that for a Ferengi would mean you'd probably have to pay a percentage or some kind of fee to run your bar.
He would always know where he stood.
Yeah, so for Ferengi, having someone who's uncorruptible is a pretty good thing because it reduces your operating costs.
But right at that moment, we see somebody in a purple hoodie with a Bajoran nose kind of turn ominously around slowly and look towards the people having this conversation. Who is that guy? We don't know.
That's totally a callback to the fact that they left Alderaan. He's a Sith Lord. We definitely have a Sith Lord in this. We're just reinforcing the fact that the two universes are joined.
Oh, that's excellent. To be clear, neither one of us thinks that, but that's great.
I'm just kidding.
We go now to Bashir, who is in Ibudan's quarters, and he's checking for some DNA. He's scanning all over the place.
He's using a Starfleet blacklight.
At the end, he seems quite pleased with himself, so perhaps he's found something. Hair Guy has assembled a mob. Well, a small mob of only 6 people.
An interim mob.
Yes, and they've taken their concerns to Sisko and Sisko's office. Kira is there as well, but she dismisses them. Just basically says, get out of here. You're all wrong and losers. They all get on the open-air elevator very slowly.
They leave slowly.
Yeah, they all like cram into the elevator. It's really weird.
I wonder what the limit is on that. They never show the little sign saying, you know, maximum occupancy.
Well, it's at least 6 people because that whole mob fit in there. Kira is angry. Shocking.
Hashtag angry woman.
Yeah, Sisko says they have the right to complain because the person in charge of the murder investigation is also a suspect. It's a conflict of interest, you know, at best, even if he's innocent. So Sisko has decided to ask Odo to step down.
I feel this is where they should play the Law and Order music.
Dum dum. In medical, Bashir and Odo are talking, and Bashir tells him that he found something called Seoferane fragments near the matter reclamation unit. Is that the trash?
I assume so. This scene is loaded with classic Star Trek technobabble.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So someone, ostensibly Ibudan, was trying to throw away Seoferane fragments, which he says are from a biological sample container. Bashir says he may have been conducting some kind of medical experiments in his quarters.
I did like it when Odo said, translation?
Yes, which we were all saying. Please explain.
Technobabble.
While Bashir is trying to figure out what he's found, Sisko calls Odo to his office. So we jump now back to Sisko's office, and Sisko is telling him that he's relieving Odo of his post temporarily, and he's putting Dax and Kira in charge of the investigation.
I want your gun and badge.
He says he doesn't believe Odo is guilty, but this is an interesting scene where Odo says to him, well, why not? You should be suspicious. You don't know anything about me. And he says that he's sure Sisko has some doubt. Actually, quite like that conversation because...
Yes, that was good.
We see Sisko playing the politics.
Right.
And there's also a little bit of, since this is also a leadership podcast, there's also a little bit of leadership behavior here that sometimes when you enter a leadership situation and you are dealing with people who maybe are brand new to you, like you started a new company, and you're just trying to convince them that you're trustworthy by showing them that you trust them, even though you don't yet. That's what I felt. Cisco's like, no, this is fine. I'm sure you didn't do it. But he does. He thinks he might have done it.
I still think this is the classic, I want your gun and badge.
That's exactly what it is. And for the second time in this episode, Odo stomps out of Cisco's office. He bashes the door open button and then stomps out.
It's difficult to slam doors when they slide.
That's true. Now Odo is walking through the promenade, I guess on his way to his office, and everyone around him is giving him suspicious looks. Maybe he should look like someone else for a while. I mean, he's a shapeshifter. Pick a different look.
Maybe he should ask Cisco, can I hide in a bucket in your office, please?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, just regenerate in a bucket until we've solved this crime. Well, he gets to his office. He sees that it's all torn up and someone has scratched something into the wall. I think it says shifter, as in shapeshifter.
Yeah.
And they've kind of broken a bunch of things. And he sees Quark now standing in the door. And Quark says that he can find out who did it if he wants.
It doesn't seem like a very nasty insult to just call someone a shifter.
Because that's what he is.
Obviously, this is a hate crime.
Clearly. Odo says it really doesn't matter who did it because he's not in charge of security any longer. And Quark says that's a piece of good news to brighten his day. Odo tells him you should take advantage of this absence. No. Odo tells him that Quark should take advantage of his absence while he can, you know, implying that he'll be back. And Quark says, oh, I will. I'll have every confidence man in the sector on board tomorrow.
There's an odd level of respect between the two. No. I did like the way that Quark actually brought a data pad for Odo and didn't directly say, oh, you know, here are the people that knew the murdered man, etc. The way he did it as a sort of subtle, if you notice, it looks like he dropped the pad and picks it up and hands it to him.
I thought he was helping pick things up. You're saying that's one that he brought?
Yeah, if you watch the scene, he actually comes in with a data pad.
Okay. Okay, and we find out later what information Odo gets out of it. We don't find out yet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I thought that was a nice touch because it definitely shows there's some kind of professional respect between the two.
Well, there's this interesting conversation where Odo says to him, you're going to get sloppy now because I won't be watching you. And Quark says that won't happen because all the years that Odo has been watching him has made Quark really be diligent. And Odo says, oh, I made you a better criminal. That's a great conversation.
Yes.
Odo asks Quark if he needs a shapeshifter in his organization, which makes Quark laugh uncomfortably. Then he makes kind of a joke of it, but I don't think he was joking. I think he was serious, but they sort of make a joke of it.
I didn't know how to take that. I thought that could have gone either way.
I don't think he was joking. I think he was serious because I think at this point he's thinking, screw the Federation. I don't need to go back into this security job, right? I don't need you. Because you get mad when people tell you things like this.
That's true. Yeah. That is possible.
Quark says that he was asking some of his friends in Kron Tobel prison, which I guess is where Ibudan was. He said he was asking if he'd made any enemies while he was there, but he couldn't find any. It's kind of a funny line. He said he mostly hung out with the Bajoran dissidents that the Cardassians had locked up. So I guess all the people who were in the same boat hung out together in prison.
Probably a smart move for him, as he would then seem less like just a murderer and more like I was a freedom fighter.
Right. Meanwhile, back at medical, something is growing from the fragments that Bashir found in Ibudan's trash. The DNA patterns, he says, look human, but there's some genetic drift that he can't explain. He put the fragments, I don't know, into some little dish and then he put it in some water, some kind of liquid. To me, it looks like a turkey in water. It, like they're defrosting a turkey before Thanksgiving. That's what it looks like.
He and Dax were basically cooking giblets in the bag, is what I thought they were doing.
That's what it looked like. He says they have to wait to see what it turns into. They can't really tell.
With all that medical science, you'd think they'd have a good idea.
Yeah, I was slightly suspicious of that. Little hand wavy. Cisco arrives and invites Dax to lunch. And Bashir mistakenly thinks that he's been invited. He has his back turned to Cisco when he says it.
I did like that.
And so he's like, oh, I'd love to go to lunch. Dax says she's busy anyway, so Cisco is stuck having lunch with Bashir at Quark's.
Lunch with the annoying little brother.
Yes. And now we jump to Quark's and they are having lunch. And Bashir is asking how many lives Dax has led. And Cisco says he doesn't know, but I think he says at least 6.
Yeah, Dax keeps on changing the number.
Oh, because he keeps saying different things to him.
Yeah.
But he says it's at least 6. Cisco says he used to get into a lot of mischief with Dax. He starts telling some story about going to the races.
Yes.
Don't know what was being raced. And he said there were these gorgeous 7-foot Ruji twin sisters that Curzon knew. Bashir looks very excited to hear this story, but then he stops and he doesn't finish the story. He says he guesses they won't be doing things like that again. I'm 100% positive I didn't want to hear that story anyway, so I'm glad he stopped.
Inappropriate story for work.
Ugh. He tells Bashir that he and Dax are just friends, and Bashir says something about how Sisko should find her really hard to resist because he knows so much about her. It's a really bizarre conversation.
That is an odd conversation, yeah. I did like the way that Sisko said he needs to come to terms with it.
Yeah, but he said he can't look at her that way because he says Dax used to beat me at bare fist Juro counterpunch. I don't know what that is, but I assume it's some physical boxing kind of thing or judo or something.
Right.
He can't really look at Dax any other way. We also have that thing earlier where he said he views Dax as kind of a father figure.
Who is like a second father. Most importantly in this scene, Morn is at the bar again.
We sort of switch perspectives and we look at the bar and we see Odo coming in and he sits down at the bar. When he sits down, everybody around him clears out, including Morn.
Odo is the outcast.
Yes.
Morn just goes with the flow.
Yeah, yeah. Now we jump to Keiko and some Starfleet guys are walking in delivering desks to the new school. Miles comes in carrying their daughter, Molly, I think her name is. And Keiko says she wishes their daughter was old enough to come to school, but she's not. She's still pretty young. And she also says she's not sure if anybody's going to come except for maybe Jake. Then Miles gives her a gift of an old-timey school bell, which is very cute. Outside of the school at that point, there's some kind of a ruckus going on. A group of Bajorans is shouting at Odo and following him menacingly. And I kept thinking, just turn into a big monster and chase them away. But he doesn't do it. He just kind of walks down the hallway to his office. And he goes into his office and shuts the door really quickly. And they keep shouting at him through his office door.
Okay, I have a theory about this. It's because Odo has his own code of conduct. Turning into a monster to frighten the mob, I believe, would violate that code. Right. Plus, it would kind of take him down to the same level as the mob, and I think he would want to avoid that.
Right, but at the same time, he should protect himself, I guess.
Yes.
The mob keeps shouting at him through his office door, and Miles steps out of the school, sees this, and calls security for help. In other words, he calls Kira and says, please come and help me.
Kira, come and beat some people up.
I also noticed that Morn is part of the mob at this point.
Oh, yeah. He just goes along with the flow.
So we go back to the turkey, which now looks a little bit like something else. It looks like a giant rock or some kind of bottom-feeding fish.
They're still growing the giblets in the bag.
Exactly. We jump back and forth a little bit. The crowd is shouting at Odo through his office door. They start throwing stuff at the door, and we see the purple-hooded guy again. He's menacingly standing near the door.
Clearly a Sith Lord, causing trouble.
Dax and Bashir have determined that the giant turkey fish rock thing is definitely humanoid.
Not giblets in a bag.
And Bashir says to run a chromosome analysis on it. The mob now is getting nasty. Sisko has turned up and he tells security to get some weapons.
Oh yeah, it's turning into a full-blown mob. You gotta have a good mob.
Yeah, they throw something at the door and they break the glass or whatever material that is. The bad guy with the feathered hair is leading a chant of shifter, shifter, shifter.
They could have at least worked on the insults.
That was a ridiculous chant.
Yeah.
But that seems dangerous. And now the phasers arrive and they're passing the phasers out amongst, I guess, the Starfleet people.
The security officers.
Sisko pushes through the crowd and quiets them. Odo should use that in the future. He should just go shifter, shifter about himself. Just own it.
Yeah.
When someone starts picking on, just own it. He should get a t-shirt. Shifter. Someone shouts that Odo deserves to die. The creepy guy says, how do you get a rope around the neck of a shapeshifter? He's so creepy. That's the hair guy. He's so creepy.
They want a full-blown lynching.
Yep. And now a brawl ensues, and Sisko shoots his phaser at the ceiling, which he does before. He did it in the pilot.
Yep.
Isn't that awfully dangerous?
He had it on stun.
Oh, wouldn't it go through the floor and shoot somebody upstairs?
There's somebody in the docking rings now dead.
Seems so ill-advised. I don't like that he does that. Sisko now gives a speech about how they shouldn't condemn a man just because he's different than they are. And I wrote down, oh, there's my lesson.
Yes.
I needed a lesson in this episode, and there it was. Hair guy says, we don't condemn him because he's different. We condemn him because of the evidence. Sisko tells them to disperse. And just then Bashir arrives saying, the man who was killed was not Ibu Dan.
Oh, classic Star Trek. Dun, dun, dun. Last minute revelation.
Last minute, yes. We go back to medical. Turns out Ibu Dan had cloned himself to frame Odo for his own murder. very clever.
What's funny here is I didn't remember this episode.
I didn't remember that either.
I think I got almost all the way through before I went, oh, now I remember it. They're not growing giblets in a bag.
Right. I think that's what I did too. I also could not remember until it happened. And then I went, oh.
So it's kind of nice to rewatch it.
So that turkey in a bag, which is now a giant pink rock, kind of, is starting to turn into Ibudan, apparently, a clone of Ibudan. So soon there will be another clone. So they all are asking, well, where's the real Ibudan? And Odo says he has an idea. Now we jump to the ship again, where Ibudan's quarters were. The purple hooded dude, the older guy, enters a room. I think it's on Ibudan's ship.
Maybe he was a Jedi.
Maybe he was. He walks in and a chair in the room turns into Odo. So there's our shape shifting for the episode. The old dude says, hey, I'm going to call ship security. And Odo says, go ahead. I'd like to ask them how the name Lamonet S appeared on the manifest yesterday. And the dude says, that is my name. But Odo says, yes, but you didn't arrive on any ship in the last 3 weeks. And Lamonet says he's wrong, or he's in error, I believe.
Don't mess with Odo when it comes to detailed facts.
Now we get some exposition and explanation of what's happening. Odo says that this guy, Lamonet, spent the last few years in prison with Bajoran dissidents, one of whom was arrested by the Cardassians for conducting experimental research into cloning. Uh-oh.
The data pad from Quark came in useful.
Yeah, and all I could think was, oh, we're solving the mystery with information learned off screen. That's that's frustrating. It's like an Agatha Christie book. All of a sudden, we have all this information that we didn't have before. The guy tries to escape because clearly Odo's onto something, but Odo grabs him and dramatically pulls off a giant rubber mask, revealing that under the old guy's face is actually the original Ibudan.
Oh, that was some Mission Impossible stuff there.
So Ibudan was on that ship. He arrived with his clone, apparently. My only real question is, why was he throwing parts of another clone in the trash? It just seemed sloppy.
It was the packet that the clone came in.
Oh, like little seed packets.
Yeah. Build your own clone. Oh, this seems like good.
Now we get a voiceover from Sisko as we kind of wrap everything up. He says, Ibudan has been turned over to the Bajoran authorities. I guess murdering your clone is still murder.
Indeed.
Anyway, he says everything's back to normal, though no one has apologized to Odo, which, yeah, that sounds right. Jerks don't apologize. Angry mobs don't usually reform to say I'm sorry.
Sorry I called you a shifter.
Do you think that's what the hair guy says when he walks by?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry I called you a shifter. That's what he should say.
Yeah.
So the whole episode wraps up in the school. Keiko is looking sad because no one has come to her class. It's 9 o'clock and there's nobody there. Sisko comes in with Jake, which is good. And then a few minutes later, Rom brings in Nog and he tells Nog not to sit next to the human, which is funny. And he grabs him and makes him move.
I did like that.
Then a couple of more kids arrive and Keiko's happy because now she has 4 people in her school. And yeah. She tells them all that they should be on time next time. Which I really thought was funny.
You'd think Jake would be the one to arrive on time, seeing as Sisko is his father.
I think he was the only one who arrived on time.
Yeah, it was a nice touch. I did like that Rom seemed to want to expand the horizons of his kid.
So Sisko smiles, and the end.
This episode seemed to have a more consistent ending than the last episode, which just seemed to run out of time, done.
It just ended.
Yeah,
the last is like, oh, the bomb didn't go off, it's over. And this one, yeah, we kind of wrapped it up. We wrapped it up fast, but in very Star Trek fashion.
Indeed.
And then we had a little happy thing at the end.
Right. Okay, so in summary, I like the continued development of the character of Sisko. Avery is really leaning into the role. I like how he's portraying Sisko. I like the way he's able to give a soft side of the character and then put the hammer down when he needs to. It's building on that political approach.
Yeah.
And I think he's getting a better understanding of the other races and how the station functions. I do like that about the show.
Okay.
Also, the expanding of Quark, of if you just leave the pervy side of Quark and the fact that he creeps on all the women alone. If you just leave that part out, he seems to have a respect for Odo.
I do like that. The thing that I liked about Next Gen was the development of the relationship of the different characters. So I definitely appreciate seeing that here.
Yeah. And I think that's what they're building on in this show.
Okay. That's your overanalysis for the episode?
I don't see how the murderer of a Cardassian during the occupation didn't result in him being executed.
Well, I guess it depends on if they were letting Bajorans kind of handle their own security. And, you know, he may have been on death row. We don't know.
Okay, that's a good point.
But then they dropped the death row and then the Cardassians left and said, oh, never mind. It's no big deal. Let's talk about women in the future in this episode. And it still doesn't look fantastic for women in the future.
There's a lot of angry women in the future.
There are a lot of angry women. Dax was at least a little sciencey, although she had to deal with someone at work constantly pursuing her, which...
Oh, yes.
That's not cool. No should mean no. Kira didn't have a lot to do, so I don't have a lot to say about her. She was angry at one point, but I think justifiably so. She was angry about the treatment of Odo, who she views as someone that she trusts and respects. Then we go to Keiko. First of all, I'm happy there's another woman. That's good. I liked Keiko on Next Gen. She didn't do a lot, but, you know, she's a perfectly legitimate character. But in this episode, a couple things. They moved for Miles' promotion, which I feel like they should have talked about in advance. It seems like they didn't talk about it until they got to Deep Space Nine, or they didn't look into it.
Seems like an important thing to discuss.
It's important because not only are they part of a couple, they also have a kid. So you have a family to think about. And if you're taking that child to somewhere dangerous or somewhere where there's not a school or somewhere where there are no opportunities, is that really the right thing to do? And I'm not saying it isn't. I'm just saying it seems like they should have talked about it before they got to Deep Space.
Right. That does seem like an important subject to discuss before you make a big move and a commitment to it. I can't believe they don't have a need for a botanist. Starfleet is all about exploration. Wouldn't you have exploration missions going on constantly, looking at planets?
Yeah.
You'd need a botanist for that.
Miles alluded to that, but she said, well, I'm not on any of those ships. So I don't know what that meant. I guess that Starfleet itself wasn't having those missions, but there were missions that were going on.
Yeah.
I was frustrated that they didn't at least talk about they're near Bajor. She could work on Bajor and commute. I'm sure there were jobs there. It just seems like they're...
I feel there would be plans on Bajor.
You know, she changed from being a scientist to a school teacher of 4 students to basically, you know, a little country school kind of thing.
A rural school.
I don't know how I feel about it. She replaced the angry woman briefly, which, but in the end, at least she was doing something. They gave her a job and it was a job that she chose and something she seemed to feel good about. And she had to develop a new curriculum across cultures, which I'm sure would be quite challenging. I'm just not sure how I feel overall about this. Did we even consider Miles changing his career?
Yes.
And my last note is Odo and the complaints about compromises and always going the way of the female. I was not amused.
You mean you don't want to listen to Klingon opera?
Oh, I also didn't like, I guess I had one other complaint. My last complaint is when Bashir and Sisko are sitting together and trying to make decisions about Dax's dating life. Remember Bashir said, she should be irresistible to you because you know so much about her. You know what? Maybe instead she's super interesting to him because of all the lives that she's led. But that's not what he said.
That was more what I took from it. I thought that Bashir was being the one who had a single-minded approach to her of she's just somebody attractive he wants to date. Well, Sisko had the more sensible approach, which was this was a friend who had now changed host, and how was his relationship with the friend going to continue?
Sisko, yes. Bashir, no. Bashir said, I backed up in my notes, that he should find her hard to resist. It's not that Sisko is trying to decide if he should date her. He's already decided. But in this conversation, Bashir is deciding if she should be with Sisko or with Bashir.
Oh, I see what you mean there.
They're sitting there having a conversation about who she should date, and it is none of their damned business. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, that's the valid point.
Thank you. Okay, thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral?
I'm giving it a thumbs up. I did enjoy the episode. It was a little bit like a Scooby-Doo mystery, but I'm still giving it a thumbs up because it continued to build the characters. I liked how it portrayed Sisko, Odo, and Quark.
I also give it a thumbs up. I thought it was a very Star Trek-y episode, and I liked it.
I would agree.
I had some issues, but I have issues with a lot of things. Doesn't mean I don't like it. I thought it was a very good, very Star Trek feeling kind of episode where we wrapped everything up at the end and everybody just gets over it and moves on.
Yeah, it did have that Star Trek feel, the way Keiko seemed to be the one embodying a lot of the Starfleet principles, you know, the embracing other cultures and also wanting to spread understanding between different races.
Yeah. All right. That is it for season 1, episode 3. come back next week for episode 4. In the meantime, if you'd like to tell us your own overanalysis of this or any episode, or if you just want to say something nice to us, please feel free to email us at rebingeit@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at rebingeit.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Star Trek DS9 podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it from me.